Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited about our guest, Josh Allen Dykstra. And he and I are going to be talking about the revolution of work. So let me introduce Josh, and then we're going to dive right in. Josh Allen Dykstra is a recognized thought leader on the future of work and company culture. He is the CEO of StrengthScope US, the exclusive US provider of the world's most energizing workplace assessment. And his articles and ideas have been featured by Fast Company, Forbes, The Huffington Post, and Business Insider. He is also a co-founder of three other organizations that help people evolve the way they think about work and life: The Work Revolution, Beforte, and Dynamizer. His eclectic work background includes projects with organizations like Apple, Sony, Genentech, Microsoft, HTC, and USC, as well as startups and nonprofits. He holds an MBA in executive leadership from the University of Nebraska, and his latest book, Igniting the Invisible Tribe, Designing an Organization That Doesn't Suck, is available on Amazon and Audible. Welcome, Josh.
Oh, thank you so much, Claudette.
Glad you're here.
Oh, likewise. Likewise.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. I love that. I love the title of your book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely gets some attention. People, it's fun to say. You know,
it's fun to say. Yeah, I had fun saying it. All right.
And who doesn't want an organization that doesn't suck? I mean, the bar is pretty low, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, that's where the bar needs to be right now, sadly.
Yeah. Which is a great segue into asking you about StrengthScope US. Like, I'd love our listeners to know a little bit about your company, because I know you're doing really great work in the world.
Yeah, we're really trying to. So StrengthScope is an assessment instrument at its core that comes from the UK, and we're bringing it to the United States territory. So not many people have heard it over here in the US yet, but we think it will be kind of taking the US culture by storm in the next couple of years, because it's unlike any other assessment that I've ever experienced. You know, most assessments are preferential in nature, right? I kind of prefer to do this, or I prefer to do that, and I'm sure, just like many people listening, I've done a lot of these things over the years, and anything that creates more self-awareness is, you know, first and foremost, great, right? Like that's a really, really good thing. So anything you use to do that, we're a big fan of. And I think from our perspective, when we come across something like StrengthScope, it makes transformation more actionable, more practical for people with busy, busy lives. We think this is pretty vitally important, that we can just take it and use it and run with it and know what to do with it. So it goes beyond awareness into the world of transformation, right? So we like to say assessment is easy, transformation is hard, and the transformation is what's most important to us. And we find that this instrument helps us transform the way that we think and work and live, because what it measures is energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's not about, you know, oh, I prefer to kind of look at this thing or that thing or whatever. It's not really about that. It's about, how do you have more energy and flow and work in your zone as often as possible? And that's not really an optional thing for people at work these days. We need, everything starts with energy. And so if we can figure out how to help people have more of that, that's kind of what we're about.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that. I mean, I think it's so, I know I love taking the assessment and learning about it, and this piece around energy, right? In my work in culture and organizations, I rarely hear anybody ever talk about the word energy unless they're using it to the negative, like, oh, we're so drained.
Yes.
You know, so what, I mean, how is that conversation going when you're talking to companies about energy? Like, what are you hearing?
Yeah, I think first of all, it is a pretty fresh kind of topic of conversation. We don't talk about it nearly enough or at all many times. And yet, kind of in a roundabout way, our organizations, I think what we really want is for people to be at their best. You know, so we don't really talk in those terms, but everything about an organization is kind of set up to help. At least the rhetoric is set up to say, hey, we need to give your best contribution here. And so that's kind of the implicit statement. If you're going to work here, we need you to bring your A game. Mm-hmm. And yet, so many things about modern organizational life are actually designed to not help you bring your best. Mm-hmm. Right? There's all of these strange policies and rules and procedures and structures boxes that we have to fit into. And so even though we're telling people, hey, you bring your best and most brilliant ideas and your willingness to collaborate and your capacity for complexity, like bring all of these things that are really like the highest and best of you. And then at the same time, we have organizations that completely kind of do the opposite. Right, they actually drain people's energy more than they add to it, and we think that's actually a pretty huge and fundamental problem, and really in a nutshell explains why the engagement statistics are what they are.
Yeah. Absolutely, one of the things I noticed, and I may have said this to you when we debriefed my assessment, was when I was looking, at the top, I forget exactly what it says at the top of every page, but essentially, think of when you're at your most energized or something, mm-hmm. right? And how would you rate yourself? And even though I absolutely love what I do, right, and feel energized by it most of the time, I still had to keep, we're so programmed, I think, at work to be doing things, like you said, that aren't designed to bring out our best. So I had to keep putting myself back in, okay, yes, this is when I'm at my best. This is when I'm feeling my most energized. I almost feel like we're programmed to just move forward no matter how we feel.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I think the go-to strategy for getting things done is power through, or maybe more colloquially, suck it up and do it anyway, right?
Right.
Right. If you're not happy or you're not energized, who cares? You've got to get the work done. So you power through and you make it happen. And all of the science is and all the research is indicating that that's actually a really terrible strategy for getting things done. If we want people to get things done in an efficient and effective way, powering through is very often the worst strategy that you could take. But what's I think needs to be the transformational part of this conversation that we need to have moving forward is we need to start talking about these things that actually help you be at your best. Most of us don't have a clue what really specifically energizes us.
True.
What brings us energy. And then we also don't really know in a specific scientific way what derails our energy. So, and we can talk about those things in vague terms, but most of us don't have a way to specifically point to the current of energy that runs underneath our daily activities and say, oh, it's this part of this meeting that really jazzes me, or it's this part of this interaction with this person that's sucking the life out of me. Right? We don't have any energy intelligence, most of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we believe this is kind of the future conversation that we're hoping to bring into the future of work is how do we deeply increase our energy intelligence so we can know how to be at our best more often? Because until we have some awareness and understanding about what moves us, what drives us forward in a really specific and scientific way, it's really hard for us to stay at our best as often as we should be.
Yeah, it's so incredibly true. And it was making me, so about 18 or 19 years ago, I became trained and certified as a coach, right? When almost no one had heard of coaching. And one of the things that was really interesting at that point about life coaching and personal coaching was that we did talk about energy, and it was one of the few places because we talked to people about what drained them and what energized them, and we can, you know, coach people around connecting to that. And I think, so for me, it's kind of been, it's been part of the way I've thought about things and worked with people for a long time. And I think, to your point, unless you've really been, you've been coached or you've been in some sort of personal development program, right? This idea of energy and the energy intelligence just doesn't even cross people's minds.
Yeah. And even then, in many of the personal development kind of conversations, at least in organizations, I think to your point, coaches are much better at bringing up things like energy. Mm-hmm. But it's in, you know, in the personal development conversations that are happening inside organizations, a lot of that's competency based, right?
Yeah.
It's really focused on what can you do well and what can't you do well. And that is a very different thing than what energizes you and what doesn't. Because mm-hmm. you can be very good at things that suck the freaking life out of you, right? and many
Absolutely.
People are. And that's exactly what they're doing at work. They've become very good mm-hmm. at their job. But man, it does not get them out of bed in the morning. It does mm-hmm. not intrinsically motivate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's absolutely true. And so it's almost like where it sounds like you're training people. You're actually training people to tune into this and training companies to learn how to listen to energy and understand what it means.
I think that's a huge part of it, is kind of an education piece. I know it was for me. I didn't really think about, you know, what energized me and what didn't before doing this work and coming across the StrengthScope instrument. I had work to do and I powered through and got it done. Mm-hmm. But as I've learned to pay more attention to this kind of undercurrent of energy that runs underneath everything that I do, I've become so much more efficient about the things that I work on and the way that I work on them.
When we forget about that, how connected energy and efficiency really, really are, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're so intertwined. They support each other. It's symbiotic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the reason anything happens is because someone has the energy to do it. And so this is the other thing that we point to. And the only reason anything happens ever is because someone has the energy to get it started and make it happen.
Yeah, and on that note, we're going to take our energy and take a break. So you're listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about energy and how it impacts the future of work. Stay tuned.
Are you searching? Looking for a sign? A message you need to hear? From the great unknown? From the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul and the depths of who you are? The universe put someone here to talk to. Someone God gave a blessing to that you may find insight with. TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790.
Tune in each month to Synergenetic Living Radio, where Rick and Grace Paris discuss the synergenetic way of life, what it means to truly change your perspective in life, what it means to take control of your life and manifest your true desires. For more information on Rick and Grace Paris and Synergenetic Living, check out synergeneticliving.com. Get clear on the life you desire and the current life you are creating and what is between the two. Synergenetic Living, living life loud.
Curious about the meaning of life? Do you want to deepen your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. The school also organizes group meditations each year to benefit humanity. Whether you're just beginning to reflect on the spiritual side of your life or are a more experienced spiritual seeker, the school warmly welcomes you to join our group. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit esotericstudies.net. That's esotericstudies.net.
Get
gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit saraloos.com. That's S-A-R-A-L-O-O-S.com.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
Back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. And for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Josh Allen Dykstra, who is the CEO of StrengthScope US. And we have been talking about work revolutions and energy and all sorts of interesting topics, haven't we, Josh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How energy really matters and how it's so intertwined with efficiency. And I know one of the things that you spend so much time on and you're really known for is thinking about the future of work and how it's evolving. I mean, it's such a big area, but I'd love to ask you, like, what are you seeing on the landscape right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, yeah, one thing to make sure that we know before we even talk about the future is to talk about where we're at now and just how kind of dismal it is, depending on your viewpoint, you may or may not be aware of kind of what happens at a macro level. So if we look at kind of engagement statistics, and so engagement, of course, means that you're in your work because you want to be, not because you feel like you have to be, right? You're engaged mm-hmm. in the work that you're doing. And the statistics on this, of course, are terribly low and have been, and ever since we started measuring this, it's hovered at about 2/3 of people being disengaged at work in the United States and worldwide. It's even worse. It's only about 15% of people that are engaged worldwide.
Wow.
And yes, it's 85% worldwide disengaged. If you look at passion, it's even worse. You look at passion in the workplace, or people passionate about this thing they spend the majority of their lives doing. By the way,
you don't.
Where do you spend more of your life than at work? Probably nowhere. And almost 90% of people, according mm-hmm. to a Deloitte survey done a couple of years ago, are not passionate about this thing they spend the majority of their life doing called work. Mm-hmm. So that's just an epidemic, I think, that we've got all of this kind of wasted human energy and potential and talent that's just being kind of squandered in mm-hmm. ways because we're just not kind of deeply connecting to this mm-hmm. thing that we're doing with the majority of our lives. And then you add to this another study done by Deloitte that shows that 92% of executives want to fundamentally and feel the need to fundamentally reorganize their companies. 92% of executives believe they need to fundamentally reorganize the way that the organization is structured. They're seeing this as an enormous challenge. So you kind of combine all of these things, and I think you start to get a picture of where we're headed in the future. Right? We've got this epidemic of massive proportions that by and large, people are not connected at a deeper level to the thing they spend the majority of their lives doing, called work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got this organizational crisis where people are saying the organizations are not working the way that we think that they should, right? And so much of this comes from a lack of customer responsiveness, let's say, and ability to kind of keep up with the changes in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at our organizations and we say they're too slow, they're too bureaucratic. There's too much red tape. There's too much that stands between me and doing the work that I need to do. And executives recognize this. And of course, workers everywhere recognize this too.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the reasons for the massive disengagement and disconnection, I believe, is that we don't feel like we get to contribute at work the way we want to. So I believe what we're going to see in the very near future of work is a massive kind of reorganization around principles like energy. And so if we start to think about what the way that an organization is organized right now, it's really not optimized to help you be at your best, like we were talking about. And I believe this is where we're headed in the future, and we're starting to see a lot more of this this dialogue and conversation happen around different organizational structures and whatnot. But people are starting to say, something needs to fundamentally change so I can actually be at my best more often at work, because that's what creates great customer experiences, which actually creates a competitive advantage for us, creates a place for us in the marketplace, allows us to keep our customers loyal and happy. And so we need to do this. And so that's why I think we see so much conversation around things like culture in the workplace now, is we're recognizing that we don't have a shot at competing in the future unless we've got a culture that actually helps people be at their best as often as they can be.
It's so true. And I was the Deloitte study with the 92% of executives who think they need to reorganize. I hadn't seen that, but I'm like, and it's like, how often do we hear anything like, "Wow, our company reorged and it was amazing"? Yeah. Almost always so stressful, right?
Oh my!
And people dread it.
Well, it's because the way that people think about reorganization right now, it's like moving deck chairs around on the Titanic, right? It's like they're just shifting, they're just moving superficial things. They're not actually redesigning the way that the organization is understood, and that's what needs to happen. Is it needs to be a fundamental kind of tectonic, really deep understanding of, okay, this, the way that organizations work right now, that it's based on some really flawed assumptions, right? So if we go back to the reason why organizations are the way they are, if you kind of push it back into the industrial age and you look at Frederick Winslow Taylor and all of the principles of scientific management that still kind of dictate so much about the way that we think about work.
Right.
That stuff was written almost 100 years ago, 1911, that book came out.
Hello.
And what I think a lot of people many people have kind of heard of, Taylorism and industrial age and blah, blah, blah. But what many people don't realize is that the reason the work exists the way it does is because his fundamental assumptions were that people were dumb and they were lazy.
So
in order to correct this assumption, so if he came in with this assumption, people are too dumb, the majority of people are too dumb to know what to do. And even if they knew what to do, they're too lazy to do it. And so his solution to this problem was a technology he invented called managers. And I don't think any managers today, most managers today, would not go around saying my teams, my direct reports are dumb and lazy. Like, they're not going to say that. But it almost doesn't matter, because the technology of management itself was designed under the assumption that that majority of people are dumb and lazy, and that still lives inside the operating system that the majority of organizations use today.
Wow. I mean, what a dramatic mindset, right? People are dumb and lazy to still be applying in 2017.
It's really out. I mean, it's just completely outdated. It's like the metaphor I like to use is that of an operating system, right? So we think about operating systems on our phones, our computers, whatever. They're always on. They're invisible. We mostly ignore them. They're historically kind of hard to change. So just like on your computer, your phone, you have an operating system. You have one in your business too, and most of our companies are running the operating system of management and authoritarian hierarchy. And that is like running Windows 95 in an iOS or Android world, right? It's so outdated and we keep patching it, right? This was all of these initiatives that we keep doing and change management programs and like, you know, superficial reorganizations. We're patching Windows 95 when we should be fundamentally upgrading the operating system itself.
Yeah, it just at a very, like I'm thinking of a really kind of micro example I encountered the other day when I was facilitating a session, and someone said, this is a manager, and she said, you know, I was trying to make this employee admit he'd done something wrong. And she and I ended up having a conversation about it later around, like, this is an adult you're talking about, right? This is not a child, right? I mean, it was the way she was thinking about this this adult man as though he was someone who had to admit, like, that he, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's just like teeny little, you know, example of what the larger issue you're talking about, the authoritarianism and that people are not equals.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been the water that we've been swimming in for, I mean, anyone that's in the workplace today has never known anything else, right? Their entire lives. They've never experienced anything besides management authoritarian hierarchy. So we think it's the only operating system that exists. And we don't, to the point where we don't even identify it as a technology that was invented. It's like, oh, I think it's just always been this way, but that is not true. Before this industrial age kind of blip on the history of humanity, the majority of people were they own their own business. Historically, most people, what's more in the human DNA is ownership and autonomy and entrepreneurship. We've just kind of really beat that out of people. We really, really taught them that they need to stay in their box, and that that's the way work is supposed to be, and work should feel like work, right? It should somehow hurt you. To work. it should be somehow painful to work. And all of these things are just, these are invented concepts that we can change if we want to. And I think we do want to.
Absolutely. We absolutely do want to. And we're going to take a quick break. And I can't wait till the break's over to continue this conversation. And I'm fascinated by what you just said about, you know, this idea that it should hurt us to work. Oh, my gosh. Wow. So this is Claudette Rowley. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to continue talking about the past of work and then where we're heading to in the future.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. I am so thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have got talk radio for all of us. Are you ready and willing and able to accept all of the abundance you can muster up in your life? Yeah! Check us out at drpatshow.com, transformationtalkradio.com, transformationradio.fm. Oh my goodness.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com.
The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens with Colette Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific Time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And if you're just joining us, my guest today is Josh Allen Dykstra, who is the CEO of StrengthScope US. And we have been talking about how work shouldn't hurt. What a great concept. Yeah. And Josh, before I forget, would you like to share, with if listeners want to contact you, and I hope that they do, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, there's probably a couple of different ways. I'm not very hard to find online. I'm out there quite a bit. And one easy way would be through Twitter. Yeah, so you can certainly contact me that way. My handle is Josh Allen, and it's J-O-S-H-A-L-L-A-N. So you can find me on Twitter there. Or you can also find me at joshallen.com. You can send me, you connect with me there. Or at strengthscopeus.com.
Excellent. Thank you. So, work shouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Imagine. What a imagine crazy that. Idea.
What a crazy but, idea. Yeah. So tell us more about that. How can we get work that doesn't hurt? You know, how does this unfold?
Yeah. That's a great inquiry. And I think part of the challenge here is that because this is such a deep-seated belief for most of us, that we believe work should feel like work. You know, that work is actually a bad four-letter word. You know, because we believe this, many of us, it becomes this really destructive self-fulfilling prophecy that because I believe work should hurt me, it does. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that, as in many areas of our lives, we get what we tolerate. And if I tolerate work that hurts me, and if I tolerate and I feel like work should, you know, hurt at some level and should feel painful, then that's exactly what I get, because I've expected that to happen. And so it just keeps perpetuating this cycle of work that just kind of sucks, in the most literal way. You know, when we say that it sucks, we mean it, that it sucks the life out of you, right? Mm-hmm. It sucks the energy, it sucks the passion from you. It does all of this sucking and not a lot of giving.
Right.
And so we think, why shouldn't an organization, why shouldn't your work be life-giving to you? It's the place where you spend the majority of your life. Your organization needs to be held to a much higher calling. Right now, the calling of an organization is to give you a paycheck, and that's about it. Mm. And we think that is falling so far short of this thing that we devote the majority of our life and our energy to. An organization ought to be a container that helps you become the best version of you and helps you live the life that you want to live and make the impact you want to make. This is what an organization can and should do. Until we expect this of our organizations, until we change our fundamental beliefs about what an organization, about what work should do, the role work should play in our lives, this won't change.
Wow. Yeah. So the work is about bringing out the best version of you. And this is what organizations can and should do. And I would venture to guess that this never crosses most organizations' collective minds.
No. And this is going to become much more problematic. And we're already seeing it. I think organizations are feeling this already, especially as we get into trying to attract and retain millennials, for example.
Yeah.
Right, we've been seeing this over the last number of years, that it's become harder to do this because millennials have a much lower tolerance for work that is not meaningful. And so this is why they jump. And so what they're saying, we were just speaking with some great folks at a university this week, and they've been doing a lot of work around Gen Z, you know, what's coming next after millennials. And it's it's going to be even worse, so to speak, right? These young people, as they enter the workplace, they are not going to give their genius and their time and their energy and their life force to an organization that doesn't provide something, some kind of meaningful work in return. And so they will opt out. They will say, no, I'm going to go somewhere where I can contribute something with my time and my energy and my life. So this is going to become even more and more of an issue for organizations. And so organizations really need to start upping their game in terms of like offering something that makes a difference in the world.
So it's just really this, it's going to be this economic issue for us, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
That we can't, we can't attract and retain, we maybe can attract, but we can't retain talent, right?
Yep.
And then the cost of turnover, the cost of hiring, right? Those real costs, hard costs.
This is, it's just going to become, and already I think is an issue. It's just become more and more apparent. You know, it's just people at the front edge of this are already seeing this happen, but it's just not quite as, aware across the whole mainstream of work yet, but it's coming.
It's coming. I was, my son is 15 and I was driving him and a friend home last night from an event, and they were in a conversation in the back seat, and they were actually talking about, so are we Gen Z or what, between the two of them and going through this, and, you know, and they're asking me, and I'm Gen X and, you know, et cetera, beginning of Gen X. And, and you know, when you, at least my son and the kids that he knows, there is this real sense of self, like you're saying, like kind of, as much as a teenager can know who they are, but, you know, knowing who they are, having kind of a solidity about them that, you know, I don't think, at least in my generation, a lot of teenagers necessarily had. To your point, there's a real difference, you know, and how that translates into adulthood and expectations around what they're going to be doing with themselves.
Absolutely. And sometimes this gets mistaken as entitlement, you know, or has been mistaken as entitlement. But really, I think what that is in a more productive way is that what we're seeing is organizations have failed to be something more than a place to get a paycheck.
Yeah.
And what looks like entitlement really is just our youngest and workforce entrants saying that's not enough. Right. That's not enough for me. I want to do something important with my life energy.
And I hear this entitlement. I mean, it depends on the organization, but some of the companies I go into, I hear people talking about this.
Yeah.
This entitlement piece of millennials. And, you know, we work to shift the conversation into something deeper, right, than versus just blaming people because they're millennials. And just into something else. But how do we get organizations to start seeing this differently? It's like the emperor has no clothes on.
So I think, well, one way is it's going to keep getting more painful.
Yeah.
Right. And pain can be a motivator. So that's one thing that will keep happening. And I think in the more positive, you know, appreciative lens of this, I think what we'll also start to see is organizations that do take this seriously and start to create meaningful places to work that help you be the best version of you and take things like culture and make that an intentional part of their business strategy. Those organizations are going to continue to just trounce everybody. And like that, and that's going to get, I think, more and more apparent also. That we see organizations that take this seriously, they're going to be more competitively agile. They're going to be more competitively strong, and that's the other thing I think that will make this transition accelerate is especially when business schools start to see, maybe there's something to a holistic understanding of all of the stakeholders in our ecosystem that our company is impacting versus just shareholder return. There's something about this more human way of working that actually works way better, then we'll really start to see everyone will come this direction, because there's no downside to it. And you get to be more of yourself at work, and your company performs better as a result. And there's no reason to not go this direction.
And it strikes me too that, in addition to what you're saying, we need to redefine what engagement means, because I think that, at least in the circle with the worlds I move in, that word has gotten kind of tired and lost meaning. So we're like, oh yeah, engagement, let's do a survey. It's a party, right? And you're talking about something so much deeper, right?
Yes.
About passion and fit and being your best self at work and bringing all of your talent and energy into what you're doing, right? When you say
Absolutely.
Engagement.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It's, there's so much more. It's really, this idea that engagement and survey have almost become synonymous, right? Like they've almost
They are, aren't they?
It's almost, like whenever we say engagement in the workplace, it's almost always followed by the word survey.
Survey, it's terrible.
And it really has diminished our understanding of what it means to actually engage people at work. Mm-hmm. You know, that a survey's not going to do that. Like when you think about it that way, it's ridiculous. It's a metric. It's a measurement. And so, and almost all of this stuff from our perspective, they're metrics that are actually hiding the real problem. So we think about, you've got a turnover or retention problem. So we're going to do an intervention on that. No, that's actually a metric. That's telling you something that's going on in your organization, right? Or an engagement problem. That's also a metric. It's telling you something that's going on in your organization. Those are red flags. Those are indicators. They're symptoms of an energy problem.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on is that people are not getting to utilize the things that energize them in their work.
Mm-hmm.
That's really at its most simple and basic level what's going on. How do I get – and this is what we've realized over the years is if we want to love our work – and wouldn't that be nice, right? Like mm-hmm. that, like what another crazy idea.
Right.
Wouldn't it be neat to be able to say that you love your work, and for the majority of people, let's say 90% of people, to be passionate about their work instead of what it is now, which is the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's interesting and what's become really apparent to us is that when you think about helping people love their work – It's one of those things that's a really complex idea. So you think about how many millions of songs have been written about love, right? Like it's just, mm-hmm. it's a complex concept, that of love. And so what we've realized is that you don't actually get love by pursuing love. It's one of those things that ensues, it can't be really pursued, just like sleep. You know, the more you try to pursue sleep, the more you have insomnia, right?
It's mm-hmm. like, right, right.
It's something that ensues out of a good day, and then you're tired and whatever, right? So it's something that ensues. And so we think love is the same way, and loving your work is the same way. And that the way that you get to love your work isn't by pushing on love. It's actually by doing something that's much more simple and scientific, which is understanding what energizes you and doing more of that, mm-hmm. and understanding what drains you and doing less of that. The more you do this, the more likely you are at the end of the day to come home and say, oh, I had a great day. I love my job. What a great day. It's because you did a bunch of things that day that were energizing for you, and you mm-hmm. didn't do a bunch of things that were draining for you. It's really very simple. And with this, something like StrengthScope, it's actually very scientifically measurable also.
Wow. Well, on that note, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking more about how we can really love our work. This is Claudette Rowley and Cultural Brilliance Radio. Stay tuned.
Transformation Talk Radio is dedicated to the education and awareness of Lyme disease.
Welcome to Lyme Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Pat Basile, the host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I am so thrilled that we've created this venue for all of you out there.
Dr. Pat Basile will be bringing the most innovative, groundbreaking information, research, treatment innovations, and stories from those it affects every day.
what we have heard is that you want to ensure for us that we keep positive, holistic, uplifting, transformative talk radio on the air. We're excited to bring you the contemporary conversations about Lyme disease.
We promise not to let the light fade on Lyme.
So fasten your seatbelts. We've got lots more to share with you in the weeks to come.
Tune into Lyme Talk Radio with Dr. Pat and help keep our mission strong on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
TheAngelLady.net.
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 1-800-323-1790. 1-800-323-1790.
Sue Storm.
Sue Storm.
TheAngelLady.net.
TheAngelLady.net.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do, for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit spiritfireretreatcenter.com.
Now you can be a part of one of the most powerful programs to help create a more joyful, loving, abundant, and peaceful world. Every day at 12 noon in any time zone, join millions of other people around the world to spend a few minutes in joy, love, and gratitude. Brought to you by Robert Schoenfeld, host of the Art of Powerful Living Radio. Together, we can raise the vibration of the planet. For more information, visit globalmomentofjoy.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Josh Allen Dykstra, CEO of StrengthScope US. So Josh, you and I have been talking about how to love your work, right? And you were just saying it's simple, right? Knowing what energizes you and what drains you.
Yeah.
So what are some practical ways people could start taking action on that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think it's simple, and we don't want to confuse simple with easy, right?
Good
but
point.
But it is simple. Yeah. It's not always easy because I think most of us have been, myself included, I think the majority of people we've been not explicitly, but implicitly kind of trained to ignore our energy. Back to the beginning of this conversation, I don't pay attention to what things throughout my day energize me or don't. I just have to do things, and so I power through and get them done. And so I think the first part of this is to start to break down some of those walls and say what really does energize me, and it is a pretty simple thing once we start to pay attention to it because we feel it. Energy is a very visceral thing. Once you start to be aware of it, it's very apparent because it's like, oh, when I do this, I feel the energy of it. This is not some mysterious kind of intellectual concept. It's a very emotional, visceral thing.
Yeah.
And so from that respect, it is easy once we start to learn how to pay attention to it. And one of the kind of techniques that we would recommend to make this easier for you is to just take a sheet of paper and write a line down the middle, you know, in a vertical line down the center. So you have two columns on your paper. On the top of the one side, you're going to write energizers. And the top of the other side, you're going to write drainers. And then you're just going to keep an energy diary for a couple weeks. And you're going to write down activities on either side as you start to notice what things energize and what things drain. And after a couple weeks, you will start to see patterns. Mm. You will start to see threads that run through your activities. And that's that energy current that runs underneath all of the work you're doing. And you'll start to see, oh, all of these things that energize me are brainstorming and strategic conversations and big picture stuff, right? And on the other side, it's going to be expense reports, and it's going to be, you know, spreadsheets, or, right? Whatever. Or it could be the opposite, right? It could be, oh, these things that energize. I love spreadsheets. I love digging into the details. On the other side, it's like, oh, don't make me go to a brainstorming meeting. Just shove a fork in my eye, right? Like, so, right, so right. Whatever it is, you're going to start to see patterns of things that energize you and things that don't. And again, from that point, the game becomes pretty simple. It's do more of the things that energize you and less of the things that don't. Mm-hmm. And that's where you kind of need some strategy sometimes, is to, you know, how to do that. That's where you need to start maybe tapping into some of your colleagues, you know, that might be energized by the things that you're not. So they can help you kind of take some of those drainers off your plate. And that's actually a really important point probably to highlight, is mm-hmm. that's something we call strengths bias. We're all biased towards the things that we like doing. And I like brainstorming, so I think everybody likes it. Mm-hmm. Or that everybody should like it. And I think they ought to like it because I do. And that is just that's a lie. That's head trash. It's a false thing. Mm-hmm. Because there are people that unequivocally love to do the things that I hate to do. And that, you know, that's admittedly weird, right? That's admittedly strange for me. How could you possibly like that? I just despise doing that. Mm-hmm. I will procrastinate on that forever to not do it. Whereas you maybe love it. And that's mm-hmm. a strange thing that we need to manually override in our brain. Right. But those are really some techniques that can help us say, how do I do more of the things that energize me and less of the things that don't? And that's exactly where I would start.
And that's I love the list, because it's so easy for anybody to do, right? Totally. Energizers and drainers. And yeah, the energy is visceral, emotional, physical, right? For some of us.
Yeah.
How we feel it. And then I think too, the energy bias is such an important point.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that we tend to, and that brainstorming is a classic example, right?
Yeah.
like I love brainstorming, but yeah, I know a lot of people who really, like, they look at me and you could just see their energy drain, right?
Absolutely.
They think it's a waste of time, it's boring, whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's not analytical, it just doesn't work for them. And I think, yeah, if we understand like how we each contribute, that's what I'm also getting out of this, right? How we each contribute from an energetic perspective.
Yep.
It sounds like it's very synergistic.
I think so. And if we can start to understand our energetic fingerprint mm-hmm. better, that's what helps us really start this discussion in a meaningful way. Yeah, because again, most of us just don't know what that looks like, and we're all so unique. And that's one of the reasons why we like the StrengthScope instrument, because it gives some science to that discussion. Mm-hmm. Right? It shows me that in a scientific way. That okay, yeah, these things energize me and those things don't, and I've got a language, I've got a place to start, but yeah, anybody can do it with an energy diary and get started that way, which would be a big help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's just it brings such awareness to this whole idea, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, like, if a team, a manager or a team lead, right? A leader had their whole team do this, wouldn't it be fascinating to compare notes, you know, like a month later, if everyone kept an energy diary?
Well, yeah. And I think you're tapping into exactly what we see the potential of this, right? This mm-hmm. This starts with your energy, but it does not end there. Because imagine if you had a whole team of people who are operating in their flow, in their zone, mm-hmm. where they were at their most energized and at their best. If your whole team was working that way, how much would you get done? If your whole organization was running that way, if your whole, right, if the whole organizational structure optimized around energy, mm-hmm. like this is where we're going with this, because we believe that that's how we really unleash the next innovation wave of humanity, is of the human species. How do we let everyone tap into their genius that's fueled by their unique energy? That's where this needs to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's really where
work, hopefully.
Sorry.
And that's work, hopefully, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Future of work, hopefully, yeah, is this wave of innovation fueled by, right, human energy.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So the possibilities there are seemingly endless.
Mm, yeah, we think so.
We think so. Yeah. So, Josh, I want to thank you so much for being here today. This is a really great show.
Oh, my pleasure, Claudia. Thank you so much for having me. So, yeah, so fun to chat with you.
Yeah, you too. And thank you so much. I mean, I think everyone listening today and any people who download this later and listen in, I mean, really, there's so many things from the show that people can really take away and use, which I love. So thank you so much. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning in to Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, had a wonderful time. Please join me the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Everybody have a great week, and we'll see you here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at claudetterowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.